Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? These questions form the text of that hymn. Of course, they come originally from the French painter Paul Gauguin, who inscribed them as the title of one of his paintings. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Three pretty serious, pretty deep questions. One could say that discovering or discerning an answer to these questions is one of the great quests of the spiritual life. Of course, it's always possible to ignore their depth and answer them flippantly. Where do we come from? Well, most recently, most of us came from our houses. What are we? We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Where are we going? Well, we're most likely going to whatever place it is we go to when a preacher steps up to the pulpit. The rest of you will get that on the way home. Because some of you are already there. But really, where do we come from? Several years ago, I began an Ancestor Sunday sermon by saying, I am Eric, son of Walter and Nancy, grandson of Frank and Johanna and Gladys and William. I noted that thanks to my finding someone on the internet who'd actually done all the work for me, I can follow one line of my mother's side all the way back to the 12th century Scotland and Berewald, first Laird of Innes. That's one way of answering the question, by establishing my place in the flow of history. I could also answer by saying that my father's parents emigrated from Sweden in the early 1900s, and that on my mother's side, the Scots-Irish Innes clan planted themselves in Appalachia in the mid-1700s. I grew up on Long Island, New York, went to college in upstate New York, moved to Boston, and then to southern Maine, out to Cape Cod, and finally here. Although my heart belongs to the Methodist church camps where I spent my summers. And that's another approach, a geographic answer to the question of where I'm from. Either way, though, these are answers to the question only of where I'm from. You could look at your own lineage, of course, and your own geographic roots, but then that would only answer the question of where you are from. And maybe that's what Gauguin meant, what he was really asking. Maybe he intended each of us to ask ourselves where we come from, what we are, and where we're going. Using the first person plural, we, to say what all of us should do individually. Yet as I danced with these questions this week, I kept coming back to them as they seemed to be written in the plural. And not just me and you and you and you, but we, us. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? This week, scientists from the University of Cambridge announced the discovery in Shaanxi Province in central China of a 540 million-year-old 1-millimeter fossil. This hemi-ellipsoidal creature, Saccharitis coronarius, I practiced all night, seems to have been little more than a wrinkled sac with a large mouth. And a really small wrinkled sac with a large mouth at that. What makes the discovery exciting, though, and at least somewhat relevant to this morning, is that it is the earliest example found to date of a dure rostome, which I didn't get a chance to practice. A dure rostome, the kind of creature that would evolve over the roughly next 535 million years into, among many, many other things, Australopithecus, often thought of as our, or the origin of our species. And that would make Saccharitis coronarius our oldest known direct ancestor. Where do we come from? Apparently, we come from a really tiny, wrinkled sack with a large mouth. Of course, we can trace our lineage back even further than that. Neil deGrasse Tyson likes to point out that every element that makes up our bodies was created in the furnace of the stars. And the energy that fuels the beating of our hearts and the firing of our synapses is the ongoing ripples of the energy that was released way back at that Big Bang. Where do we come from? We come from the stars. We come from the very beginnings of the universe. What are we? With apologies to the author of the Gospel of John, we are both in the world and of it. We are interrelated, interconnected, and interdependent with everything else that is. That ancient ancestor, that teeny tiny Saccharomyces coronarius, it is also the ancestor of things like sea urchins and sea stars and approximately 64,000 species of the subphylum Vertebrata, which includes us. If the state of Tennessee had a problem with John Thomas Scopes teaching that humans evolved from apes, imagine what they'd have done if he had said we're related to sea cucumbers. And yet, we are. What are we? We humans, as a species, are no more and no less than one piece in the grand mosaic that is Gaia. Wiccans have it right. The Earth is our mother. St. Francis had it right. Creation is our kin. So if where we come from is the stars at the very beginning of the universe, and what we are is part and parcel of all that is, we only have one question left. Where are we going? And that, I'm afraid, I really can't answer. Well, I mean, I can, of course. Apparently, we can say just about anything we want and call it a fact these days. But I wouldn't feel good doing so. The truth is that there's no way to know for sure where we're going because we're at something of a fork in the road. Albert Einstein famously observed that you can't solve a problem with the kind of thinking that caused the problem in the first place. No problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it, he said. Sometimes the quote is rendered a little differently. The world will not evolve past its current state of crisis by using the same thinking that created the situation. And that, I suppose, points toward what will determine which path we'll take from here. It is, if you will, the crux that creates the fork we face. Our current state of crisis might be more properly described as a state of crises. Racism, sexism, homophobia, and transphobia, class inequality, environmental degradation, not to mention that old standby, wars and rumors of wars. It seems as though everywhere you look, there is another crisis. And these days, it certainly seems like pretty much all of them are being exacerbated at more or less the same time. One of the songs Brother Sun sang the other night had a line in it that went, "Everybody's crying peace on earth just as soon as we win this war." A good example of trying to solve a problem with the kind of thinking that caused the problem. World War I was called the war to end all wars, but it didn't. It just set the stage for, and some say created, the inevitability of World War II. So it goes. The Vietnamese Buddhist monk, poet, and peace activist Thich Nhat Hanh once commented about our anti-war movement that we clearly knew how to write protest letters, but needed to learn how to write love letters. His point was, I think, that until we did, we were really just fighting, trying to end war through waging a different kind of war. We saw the problem of ending war as a conflict. He might have said that we were using the same kind of consciousness that created the problem we were trying to solve. Here's another example. In 2007, James Hansen of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies postulated that the upper limit for the safe amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is 350 parts per million. At the end of last month, it was estimated that we'd reached 404.5 parts per million. And if recent trends hold, that figure will rise by about 2 parts per million each year. Some say that we've already passed the tipping point, the point from which there really is no coming back. Others remain optimistic, saying that we still have a chance to turn things around. Still others, though, don't recognize or believe that there's a problem. Or they do, and they just don't care. Some people criticized Al Gore for flying around the country speaking out about the dangers of climate change, flying around in gas-guzzling, greenhouse-producing airplanes, being picked up at the airport by fossil fuel-using cars and driven to halls that were illuminated and heated by electricity that was likely often produced by coal-firing plants. It's not easy to find that different way of thinking, of acting, of being, that will address the problems our current ways of thinking, acting, and being have produced. Where are we going from here? It's hard to say. One thing I can say for fairly certain, we won't destroy the planet. Roughly 252 million years ago, at the end of the Permian era, there was an event called the Great Dying. 90 to 96% of all species died off. Around 95% of all life ended, and yet the planet continued. Life continued, radically changed in forms that had never been seen, but life continued. It is thought that there have been at least 5 of these cataclysmic mass extinction events. But our planet, Gaia, life, continued. It always has, and I feel certain that no matter what we do or don't do in the coming years, it always will. But whether or not we destroy ourselves and life as we know it really depends, I think, on whether or not we're able to develop that new level of consciousness Einstein talked about. And one way for us to develop this new consciousness, this new way of thinking, is to really recognize and really embrace new answers to the questions of where we come from and what we are. The predominant answers of our time are what got us to this point. They will not take us anywhere new. But if we can learn to really see ourselves and really know ourselves, to have roots that go back to the beginnings of the cosmos and branches that connect us as family to every other thing that is, then we might just have a chance. To answer the choir's question, there's no way of knowing how long it'll take. But I do believe we can do it. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Mystery. Mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery. I am so glad to be journeying into that ministry, that mystery, with you, our flaming chalice lighting the way.